Is there a saying maybe or something you guys use internally that helps keep you guys progressive that a smaller shop can internalize?
You just have to make sure that you're putting out a quality product.
That's Give us the secret sauce, Matt.
Bruce, if you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, you can hit up GraphicSource. GraphicSource offers industry-leading outsource options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management software when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, back office, and customer service. There's no better company in our industry to work with. They have over 40 years in the game, and they really understand shop needs. They have a proven track record of success. You can hit up graphicsource.com and you can let them know it's your first time working with them. They'll give you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order. What's cool is we just scaled up a couple artists from GraphicSource because we're getting busy, so they can ramp and scale with you. Thanks so much, GraphicSource. We really appreciate you.
Stalls. First up, remember this code, Hustler20. Why? Because that gets you 20% off your next DTF transfer order. If you're ready to take your custom apparel to the next level, Stalls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand that's scaling, Stalls makes the hustle easy. I think maybe just as important, they do a lot of really cool in-person events. I know they just hosted another print-on-demand event. There are a lot of that Screen Print Mag said was sold out, and they tour the SF1 facility. So really, really cool to learn and meet a ton of people in your similar space. So you check them out. Go to the website and check out those events and products. Easy way is launching. Actually, they're not launching. They've had this program, but you need to make sure to put in your email because they are giving away $250 product credit every single month. And why not easy snag to be able to get it? Easy Way's monthly giveaway is to their amazing customers. You go to easyway.com/giveaway. Easy Way makes reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, and equipment. So check them out. Not only that, they've got a ton of great resources. The team is incredible to be able to help you. Incredible products and distributors as well. They work with like 100 plus different distribution channels. So really, really big, awesome company. I saw you commented too, Steven, on your favorite chemicals.
701, 842. Let's go.
All right. We'll jump on in. Matt, Steven sent me this LinkedIn post that you shared about a month ago, and it says, "Happy 30th to DTG. 30 years ago, the patent for direct-to-garment printing was filed, and the revolution began. The same year, my partners Andrew and Karen and I embarked on a journey that has led to the founding of this multi-billion dollar industry. I'm incredibly proud not only to have created this machine, but also seeing my invention change people's lives around the world." And you put a screenshot of the, I'm assuming this is the patent?
Yeah, it should be the design patent.
And all that cool stuff. And I was like, holy cow, there's got to be some great stories behind here. So welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Happy DTG birthday. I always thought Scott Fresner was the father of DTG until I saw that patent. So you got the mic. What's going on?
Well, we started many years before that, you know, with the Revolution printer. So the Revolution printer came out in 96, and I had been working on DTG prior to that, okay, for quite a few years. The first machine we actually came out with was what they call a hybrid machine now. So it was DTG and screen printing. So that was in the early 90s. We actually developed a machine. But the problem was, you know, back then is not like now with print heads, right? So the machine was going to be over $1 million, you know, closer to $1.5 million. And that's in, you know, 1990s dollars, right? So probably today it'd be $1 billion, okay, at inflation in. So we had that machine. We actually had a buyer for it, but they wanted an exclusive, and I didn't want to do that. I was like, you know, I don't want to let the dream die. So one day I was out jet skiing in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm from Florida, right? And I had this idea, wow, why don't we take this super high-end technology and make a small machine that's more personable, that one person can operate, and it's, you know, a smaller machine to go into smaller shops. Everybody could own one. So, you know, I put the jet ski on the trailer.
That's where the best ideas come from, when you're out jet skiing.
Yeah, it is. So I'm out there, and I put the jet ski on the trailer. I drove back to my house. I had a flatbed scanner. So I ripped the flatbed scanner apart. I grabbed my Canon inkjet printer. I ripped it apart, stayed up all night working on that. The next morning, I had a prototype of the personal machine.
What did it look like? How did it function?
Just like all the DTG printers look like now. Okay, exactly. Just like if you look at my patent, that's exactly what the printer looked like. So I called up my friend. I said, look, come over and look at this. He did. And he goes like, yeah, this is what we need to sell. So that's how the whole, as you see, the modern DTG one person machine started.
What year was that?
Around 95. Yeah. And then we decided to form a company with Anthony and Karen. And I applied for the patent. And we actually started building that machine. It was called Revolution. And the reason the machine was called Revolution is because everybody that saw it was like, wow, this is revolutionary. This is going to change things. So I'm like, you know, one of my great, great grandfather relatives was actually in the Revolutionary War. Okay. So I thought it'd be really cool. We'll call it Revolution, right? So that's where we started. And we started selling the machine. Yeah, it was CMYK only. It was super, super slow because back then, you know, inkjets were slow. And we sold a few.
Did you come from silkscreen? Like, what was your background to want to do this? Like, were you a screen printer or what?
That's a long story. You ready for a long story?
Give us the abridged.
Wow. You know, I'm not that person, you know, if you ever hear about all my stories, let's see how to make it short. So I started screen printing when I was 14. Okay. For fun. My first commercial job I ever did for pay was for my Boy Scout troop. And I still have one of those shirts still to this day. That's, you know, 50 years ago, right? So I was a screen printer in the screen printing business for quite a while. I've always been, you know, mechanical oriented. Both my grandfathers were too. So I designed screen print equipment, automated screen printing equipment. That was pretty cool. But in the late 80s, early 90s, I started a software company that was for screen printers. It automated some of the functions needed for screen printing. So I took basically my ideas from screen printing equipment, software development, and brought them all together into the first machine, the hybrid machine. And then it just developed from there into, you know, the smaller machine that everybody knows today.
What did it feel like for the first machine, that first print, that prototype you had? Did you put a shirt down? Did you need to pre-treat it? Like, what happened?
No, back then it was CMYK only. There was no pre-treat. Okay. So we didn't even think about pre-treating shirts until, you know, the early 2000s. And then, you know, we started thinking about pre-treat as the industry goes. Just printed the shirt, you know, white and lights, and then, you know, heated it through a conveyor or a heat press, and it was ready to go. We only sold the Revolution for 2 years. Then I designed the CMYK and white machine, okay, and was just at the cusp of starting the development of the white ink when Brother came calling, and I went to work for Brother. That was in 98.
When you first started selling those machines, how much were they?
$35,000 for CMYK.
In 1996
dollars. So that's like $2.4 billion now.
How many do you think you guys sold? Like, we're talking early trade shows, like
around 25.
Right? Okay. So yeah, like very, very early.
Very early. You know, and matter of fact, I still have one. I have one sitting in a crate at my friend David Landisman owns Lawson Screening Equipment. I have my printer sitting in a crate in his warehouse.
Are you kidding me? In St. Louis?
In St. Louis.
Dave, if you want the best trade show booth, forget bringing a press. Bring that.
Yeah.
Come on. I didn't know that. In a glass case. Wow. So, okay, then you you decided not to talk to us about Brother. Why? What happened there?
Well, the thing is, we got to a point with this printer. You know, we sold a few, and then the company, me and my two friends, we realized that we could only go so far by ourselves, okay? And the big turning point was we were getting the print heads from Canon back then, and since it was CMYK only, and Canon discontinued the print head. So then we went scrambling for another print head, and we talked to a number of companies about buying their print head. But when we talked to the people at Brother were like, you know what, this is a great idea. Why don't you come in with Brother and we'll start developing the machine and we can, you know, make it a lot better. And of course they did. And it allowed my invention to go mass market. You know, that was a great thing. So I went to Brother in late 98 and started working on a business plan because, you know, and any of you people out there that hear this, that are entrepreneurs, that want us to be an inventor or start a business of some type, a good business plan is very essential. Okay. That's where you need to start. So we wrote the business plan. And then we had to go and sell it in to the different people at Brother. So everybody liked it. It was a great fit for Brother back then because they were in the embroidery business, commercial sewing machine. It fit really well. So we did the business plan, got approval. Then we started on the R&D. So at first, the R&D we started was in outside of Memphis in a place called Bartlett, Tennessee. And that's where Brother has their huge facility. It's like a 1.5 million, 1.8 million, something like that, square feet facility. And they had their R&D there. I started working on R&D with a great guy named Harry Kira. And we actually hired one of my friends as a chemist to develop the ink, Jerome Wolf. And that doesn't mean anything to you guys, but he's influenced your life. He was the inventor of the erasable whiteboard marker. He invented it back in 1968 and sold it to Pilot Pen. He said that was his hula hoop. But unfortunately, Jerry went through a few wives, and good for us, he was still working in the late 90s. So I hired him to start developing ink for us for the Brother printhead. So it was great. So we started development in Memphis.
How many tries did it really take? Was it years to get it done? I mean, I know it's still experimenting and still iterating, but
he had ink really quickly. Within a few months, he had a good CMYK, but we were working on white ink too. And the white ink, as you guys know, still today was a challenge. I mean, there's no way around titanium dioxide, you know. We moved the whole R&D to the facility in Japan. So I used to visit Japan, and we worked on the R&D between the U.S. and Japan at that point. We worked on it for 5 years because we wanted the machine to be from the ground up everything.
And it took 5 years of redoing the machine to get it ready to go back to market with.
Like, from scratch. This is like, have you read Phil Knight's book, the Nike book?
Yeah.
When he was developing the shoe. It was like the waffle iron. He's going back and forth with Japan and wiring money and sampling. This is a Phil Knight. Like, this is wow. So then at the same time, did you sell your patent to Brother? Like, how did that work? Like, this is your IP.
No, I sold my patent to another company called DIS. And then they were in charge of, you know, they took care of all licensing and stuff like that. I had nothing to do with any of that at that point.
So why didn't you hold on to it?
It's very difficult to work for someone developing things and then also being the person that you know, are negotiating with them. It's just like sports stars. I understand you hear these sports stars. They let their agent negotiate everything, right? Smart move, man. That's what you need to do. So I didn't want to deal with any of that. I just wanted to deal with the development part, you know.
Got it. So you sell it fully and this company owns it and they then license it out.
Right.
To other companies. And then you are like, well, I just want to focus on the development. So you go, Brother allows you to get into the lab.
Back when I was looking around at different people, I talked to HP. We actually hired two engineers from HP to take a look at the machine. We actually talked to Roland. I have really good friends of Roland and some other people too. So, you know, they all had their chance, right?
So then is your patent still used today? Like, is that still the DTG patent? When it's the Brother GTX and things like that?
They're only good for 20 years. So, you know, it expired a few years ago, you know. But, yeah, take a look at the photo of the patent. Look at the drawing. Doesn't that look like every single machine today, right?
Looks more like an Epson than a GTX, but, you know, I'm just kidding. They look very, very – that's super, super cool. So then, like – when Epson came out with theirs and all the free jets and Omnijets and whatever jets, like they were using that patent as well. Like that's what they were licensing.
I have no idea, to be honest with you, because that's why I sold it. So I was out of it.
When you went to a trade show with this for the first time, what are people saying? I mean, if you had the patent, I'm assuming there either were some people that were selling it, but they didn't own the tech like you did, or this was brand new and kind of mind-blowing for most folks.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that were totally freaked out. I remember when we showed it one time at the actual SGIA, which is now Print United, right? We went and showed the machine there, and there was a guy that just, he kind of freaked me out a little bit, okay? Nowadays, I would have probably told him, hey, remove this guy, right? And he was standing in front of the machine, and he was just like, he had his hands in his head, and he's like, no, I don't believe it. I don't believe this. This is not happening. And then everybody's like, oh, it's going to kill screen printing. This is the death of screen printing. But, you know, no, it's not, you know, screen printing's not going to be replaced.
Well, what was the use case then for folks like the person who bought it? I mean, at that time, I looked at this inflation calculator. This is a roughly $75,000 machine back in 96. Who was buying
it? I remember a couple of the people that bought it were going to use it for tourist applications. Like you get your photo taken at the, you know, Empire State Building and then, you know, you get your picture on a shirt. Right. And then some other guys were using it for, you know, basic, you know, in their screen print shop for one offs.
Matt, at the time, people were still people had heat presses, like people were doing two and three and four color, you know, like Bruce, I don't know if you know this, but like. Jed was telling me, like, yeah, they would screen print transfers all the time, and they were still heat pressing. So
Seiko had a machine out that would make instant transfers. So there was other applications. What people liked about this, which the same thing they like about DTG now, is the way it feels, you know? It just, that's why I don't particularly care for DTF, because I don't like the way it feels, okay? I like screen printing, though. I'm an old screen printer. But, you know, DTG just feels so much better. It's so much softer. Back then, the original Revolution machine, we used a dye-based ink. So it was super soft. You didn't even feel it in the shirt. It was kind of like how dye sublimation is on a poly shirt. So people really liked that. And that's where it, you know, started to gain traction.
Well, Brother must have invested a lot of money to get to market after this, right? Because, you know, 5 years, salaries, space, all the products. Yeah, exactly. I mean, to really put this into play.
They stepped up, man. They did, you know, I still, you know, I'm friends with a lot of people at Brother today. Brother did a really good job. They did it the right way.
Can you imagine, like, Stephen, you know, I'm assuming it was a larger company, right? So, you know, they've got their bread and butter and all the other stuff that works that they're selling currently. And then, you know, this kind of pops up and it's like, oh, you know, we do printers, but like this printer on that shirt, you know, investing 5+ years on it. I mean, most people would pull the plug after a few years. Like, I don't know if this thing's going to work. Like, let's just go back to what we should focus on.
No, they had the vision. So the guy that really got this going in Brother was a gentleman named Roger Nakagawa. And his father had started Brother US. He was a senior vice president. He was in charge of R&D. He had the vision. And he had the vision. He fought really hard for this. And then he, along with the president, Terry Kawike, of Brother US, they just both, you know, liked this product. And they both just really pushed it. And they pushed it through. And here's where we're at today. You know, they saw that it was a good complement to what Brother was doing. You know, Brother was really big in sewing machines. They were big in the textile world. At that point, they were still doing commercial embroidery machines. So they saw it as a great complement for their existing product line.
So, Matt, when you think about that, we're probably talking, okay, early, mid-2000s, you're starting to take this to market, right?
Yes, like, 2005 is when it debuted, when the GT541, that's the printer we're talking about, debuted.
When do you think DTG kind of started to hit this escape velocity where it was like, were you going to the trade shows and everyone had a DTG printer and, like, you guys were quietly building one? Like,
No, what happened was we did a field test. 2003-2004, word got out, of course, right? It's a small industry. So other people heard about it, they saw it, and I think they started trying to develop things on their own. It wasn't until around 2006-07 when it really, you know, started getting big, where everybody had a DTG printer. You know, they would get some, slap their name on it, you know, hack an Epson apart, right? Because that's what everybody had, was they'd buy desktop Epsons and rip them apart and make machines out of them.
So in one way or another, the DTF wave of DTF came to market, everyone was selling machine. This exact same thing happened in 06.
In fact, I see it all over again. It's all the same. You know, and hey, kids, you wouldn't have DTF if there wasn't DTG. Because that's where a lot of people started DTF, was putting the film on their DTG printer, right?
Yeah. So, Bruce, do you think you've asked enough questions about DTG to start talking DTF? Or, like, do you have any more for Matt that you want to talk about in this era? This is PB, pre-Bruce.
I'm curious where you think DTG goes from here then now. I'm assuming you follow it intensely still. Is it still relevant? Is it on its way out? Is it?
No, actually, DTG sales are coming back from what my friends and all the different equipment companies tell me. you know, DTG is coming back, but in a different way. Where DTG was before with a lot of smaller users, right? Because like I said, that was my dream, to have a small printer that everybody could afford, kind of like the Model A, right? Everybody could afford this printer, and it would go in every single shop. Well, that happened. After COVID was over, a lot of people started looking at DTF, because DTF came out during COVID, right? Y'all guys remember that? So it was a less expensive way to do things. So DTG kind of went down for the few years after COVID, but now it's really coming back. So you asked me about the future. Here's the future of DTG. DTG is not going away. It's always going to be here, but it's kind of changed. Now DTG has gone more to the big, high volume companies. Okay. So the high volume companies have found that it's very difficult to automate DTF. A lot of customers don't like DTF, all right, because of the way it feels. So they've come up with ways to automate and make DTG a lot better than it was before. So where you're going to see the whole DTG business go in the future is more expensive printers, higher end, more automation, and you're going to see the bigger players are in that. The days of going in every screen print shop and seeing a DTG machine, I really think that day is over. Okay.
I couldn't agree more. Me personally, we had Epson DTGs during COVID. We were early on DTF. We had one of the first DTF machines that was powderless. That didn't work. yeah, for another day. And then we sold our Epson printer, and now you can buy an Epson or GTX for nothing on Facebook Marketplace, like $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. But we do so much DTF right now, and what that's done is it's made our artwork lazy, right? Like, we're no longer screen printers. We're a bunch of raster artists that whatever, slop jobs. And now when we get big orders, we're sending them to shops that have Polaris's or Kornit's. Right. And so I just did a big thing with a massive all over print. We're like, we're not DTFing that. Send that to someone with a Polaris, and they printed it for us. So I think that makes sense. The Printfuls of the world, the bigger companies, they're going to get Kornit's, Polaris's, whatever, hybrids. And then you're just going to start to see this like ecosystem.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, it's sticker mule. You know, if you get custom shirts, T-shirts, they're printed on a DTG. You know, that's the way that we do it. You know, it still has its place. You know, you have to, in business now, look at your decoration methods as a toolbox, right? So you have a hammer and a screwdriver. You just don't have socket wrenches, right? So you got to have screen printing. You got to have DTG. You got to have DTF. You got to have everything. It's a big toolbox now. Not everything works, you know, for every application, you know. So that's just the way it is. You're not going to screen print 3 shirts. You're not going to DTG 100% polyester. You're going to use dye sub. And if it's a dark fabric, you're going to use DTF. You know, if you're going to do sleeves, you're way better off to use DTF, right? So it's just everything has its application.
You said earlier that the quality, you don't like the quality of DTF, which a lot of people might say, I don't love the quality of DTG, right? Like, it smells funny or whatever. Do you think the quality of DTF is getting exponentially better and better? Like, do you think it'll ever match screen?
No, I don't think it'll ever match screen, but it is getting better. Do I think DTG will ever match screen? Ask that question, and I'll tell you, yes, it will.
This is really interesting. I was just working on a project. We're printing this ESPN thing. It's like a big, massive streetwear print. We're doing some in-house with DTF, and we're subbing out some to DTG. And I am trying my best to get them to match as close as humanly possible. And so we're like adding halftones and distressing and degrading the art on the DTG, and so that we can do it differently on the DTF. And it's pretty, like, to the average person that doesn't know it, I will be like, hey, what do you think? And they're like, oh, they both feel good. So I do think it's getting better, but it does take a ton of art manipulation, all that stuff. But do you think that, why, you know, if DTF is just going to get better and better, why don't you think it'll just replace DTG? Is it because it's on paper? Is that like...
I think so. And I think it has to do with the way automation and all works too. You know, I think a lot of the people that's invested in the automation, you know, the big DTG printers, they're going to keep going it that way. Plus, you know, DTG is going to be able to change. I mean, you're going to be able to get, you know, screen print type effects with DTF. Just wait, guys. It's coming. Some of it's already started, but you are one day not, you know, too far away. You're going to be able to do that.
Let's talk sticker mule. You mentioned it. We've had Anthony Constantino, the founder, on a couple times. Very progressive, sharp leader. And sticker mule, I think, has really changed the game in terms of what's possible in terms of a company producing on demand like they do. On your LinkedIn, it says you're director of quality assurance, I think it is.
I'm director of quality and efficiency.
Ah, quality and efficiency, even yes. Better.
Yeah.
What is that like then in an organization like Sticker Mule? Because from what Anthony told us, you guys are re-engineering a lot. So it's no surprise that the guy who, you know, invented the patent for DTG is there too. I'm sure there's a ton of smart people. What's that like behind the scenes for you guys?
It's great. So you mentioned Anthony. He's a great owner. I mean, Anthony has the vision, okay? He can see the future. So one thing that a lot of people don't know about Sticker Mule is we have our own engineering staff. So I work with a guy, his name's Giuliano. He's probably the best automation engineer I've ever met. This guy is incredible. So we'll buy equipment at Sticker Mule. There's no secret, because people saw it in the videos that were out a few weeks ago. We have Brother Equipment. So we don't just buy equipment from a manufacturer. We buy the equipment, but then that's our secret superpower. Okay. So Anthony has the vision to invest and to have this R&D in-house and to automate the equipment. Because in order to compete in a world market, you have to automate. You have to be more efficient. You have to be able to cut costs in certain areas, but still put out a superior product. Automation allows you to do that.
What does the quality control side look like at such a high volume, just under your department? Like
so under DTG, an actual person, not AI, but a person looks. Now that could change in the future, okay? Because AI is getting better, right? But right now, a person looks at the shirts, every single shirt that's printed. And our quality control standards are very high. Now, you know, occasionally, like everything, you know, you could have something slip by, but it's very rare. We have very good quality control standards. And to go one step further, I don't know how recently you had Anthony on, but again, this is Anthony's vision. He wants to bring manufacturing back to the United States, okay? And I totally agree with him.
What's up with the watermelon thing on TikTok?
I know nothing about that. That's the marketing side of the company. Remember, I'm in the R&D.
You're in the quality. You're in the R&D side. Okay. You don't know anything about the watermelon.
No, he's a cool guy. I mean, it's great. I think it's fun, and you know, a lot of people like it. Bruce, but I'm on this side.
You haven't seen the watermelon stuff. Okay, I have a question. As a large company, whether you're custom ink, sticker, mule, Vistaprint, whatever, like, you know, right now I can vibe code in a matter of a couple of hours a really great user experience for customers, and I could build it on my website. I could literally go to Claude Code and say, make me something that looks like a sticker mule experience, and I want customers to be able to go do that. Do you guys feel threatened by AI and making it easy for anyone to build really good user experiences, given that you guys have really good technology? Like, I've always said Sticker Mule's ordering process is beautiful.
Yeah, it's really easy. And it, you know, we work on that, and we still have people to, you know, do that every day. The thing about it, though, anybody can do anything. You know, it doesn't matter. Anybody can come up with any code. They can put anything. Where it comes down to is once you order the product, let's see what you end up with when it comes in, you know. So one of the things we're doing now is Anthony had a vision of Made in America. So we're actually having our own shirts. We're making our own shirts now for T-shirts. And we've started that. And it's American grown cotton, American woven, American dyed, American cut and sewn. We print them in an American-owned factory on a machine that's invented by an American, okay? And we're doing it all. And that's right now on, you know, our T-shirt products that are coming out later on this year. Well, you got to, you know, one thing about Anthony, you know, he'll talk about this, but then he puts his money where his mouth is, man, and he does it. That's why I decided to come work here. When I left Epson, I had quite a few, and I won't name names, but companies want me to come work for them, okay? And it would be the same old thing. I've always wanted to work for a manufacturer, but with Sticker Mule having their own R&D in-house and the ability to do things and see it happen really quickly, right? Working for big companies, it's like trying to turn a ship, right? It just takes forever. We do things quickly, within weeks, you know, come up with a new idea, launch the product a few weeks later. And this is what I really like about working with Anthony and Sticker Mule.
I was going to say, now that you guys do T-shirts and apparel, is that becoming a bigger business than stickers?
No.
How would a smaller shop apply some of the quality and efficiency, you know, maybe thought processes that you guys have to a team of 10, right? Doesn't have a crazy engineering team, doesn't have, you know, huge cash flow to work with, but can be able to start to implement the thought process into their team to try to copy it.
Well, it's going to be very difficult. Like you said, the financial considerations, enormous to try to get to that level. But what I say to anybody starting out, you know, you never know. I was with a lot of these companies, you know, on day one that are huge internet companies now. And they just started in a, you know, I remember being in, I'm not going to name names, but one company that's huge, you know, they were in a small garage, right? And they had a couple printers, and they just started, and they made sure that the product that they put out was the best that they could do. You know, they did not cut corners. And I would say anybody starting out now is don't cut corners. Do things the right way. Make sure you put a quality product out. Deliver on time.
Matt, do you think it's still, I would say like 10, 15 years ago, I was like, we're going to learn how to screen print. If we're going to get into business, we're going to learn how to print. And nowadays, it's so easy to hit a button. You can start a merch company and start selling shirts and work with reputable companies. Do you think people should buy the equipment, learn to print, or should they work with a network and have other people print for them?
It just depends, you know, on what your you know, I know some people that started that way and then they eventually got into their own, you know, printing, right? I'm torn either way. You know, one thing about Sticker Mule is now we have the Sticker Mule stores. I don't know if you guys look on our website. So that allows people to do what you're doing. So if someone's an artist and has some cool design and then all his friends like it and, you know, then people in his town like it, then he or she can go to our website and set up a store and then they can have their merchandise across stickers, shirts, signs, whatever, and other people can come on and order there. So that's a really easy way for someone to get in, like you said, the merch business, right? And it makes things easy. You have a professional that is, you know, producing the product, shipping the product. All you have to worry about is being creative, right? And if that is your, you know, if that's the way that you are, if you're creative but not mechanical, right? I have a lot of friends that I used to put their kids' toys together for them at Christmas because they couldn't turn a wrench, okay? So if you're that way, you don't want to get into screen printing, okay? Right?
I can print. My left hand is longer than my right hand, so my shirts are a little crooked, but, like, I can print. I learned on a Riley 4x4. So did Bruce. Bruce learned to screen print as well. So I learned on my business partner, taught me on Corel. We used a Zante screenwriter and we cut screens on a light table. And, you know, Bruce is the same way. So we're the last of the dying breed.
Matt, I want to push you just on the last point here on the QA side. Like, is there a saying maybe or something you guys use internally that, you know, helps keep you guys progressive and you lead the department that on the Q quality and efficiency side that a smaller shop can internalize?
Like I said, you just have to make sure that you're putting out a quality product.
That's give us the secret sauce, Matt.
I'm not going to. No, I'm kidding with you.
It's the hot sauce.
There's no special thing. The hot sauce is great, man. By the way, it's really good. But think about it. You know, again, this is Anthony with his vision. He's so good. So if I give you that bottle of hot sauce, what are you going to do with it? Okay, you're not going to throw it away. You're going to be like, wow, this is a great gift. And where's it going to go? It's going to go on your shelf. It's going to go in your refrigerator. So every time you open your shelf or your refrigerator, what are you going to see? Sticker Mule. Yeah, it's really good. And my friends always ask me for it. That's the only, you know, they don't ask for anything. Oh, Matt, hey, do you have any of that hot sauce?
Matt, I appreciate you guys being able to share so much.
Matt, we need to get you to, do you go to Long Beach? You come to the trade shows?
Yeah, I normally go to the trade shows. I didn't go to it last year because I was in Italy. You know, I go to Printing United, of course, right, every year. And then I try to go to the Impressions Long Beach.
Well, we should get David from Lawson to bring that machine, and you guys should run it. And I bet you that would be the most popular booth. Because it's pretty interesting.
Are you going to Printing United?
I might be there. I know a lot of people will be. I know Bruce just had a baby, so he's out for Vegas. But there's a good chance we'll be there. But we being able to see that machine, we sat down with Bruce and I sat down with Riley Hopkins, 2 years ago, Bruce. And he was showing us all of his original print, like how he was building stuff. And I think it's so fascinating to learn how you guys did it, how you invented this stuff. Some of those old stories are so, so fascinating. So thank you.
Back in the Stone Age, guys, before y'all were born.
It was digital. It's still digital. It's still good. It's it's not
the analog versus digital.
Yeah, Matt, thanks so much for being able to join us. Pronosos, we appreciate you guys for joining us every single week as well, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.